Hello, this is Lonnie Stark of Stark Cellar Creek. Welcome to a premiere edition of Wine Tales, exploring the stories of the people, places, and vines of wine country.
I'm here with Sarah Fowler, who is the winemaker at Peju Province Winery in Napa. So first of all, welcome to the podcast, Sarah. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me join you.
So just for our listeners, could you talk a little about yourself and how you actually got into the wine industry to begin with? I think it's not an area where people think from childhood that they're going to actually make a living out of being in the winery business.
Right. Well, for me, it started off, I worked at the first Kendall Jackson facility back in high school. I worked on their bottling line. My mom was working as a production manager and tasting room person at that facility. So I worked there actually off and on for about 6 years. Started off working in the bottling line, worked in the cellar, helped out in the lab, and then ended up working a couple of harvests. They ended up paying more than most of the other jobs a teenager or young adult could make. And so that's pretty much how I started. I also used to make beer with my father. It was kind of a father-daughter bonding experience. And my family planted a vineyard. So I've pretty much grown up around vineyards, grapes, and fermentation.
So you were bottling even before you were legal to drink the stuff you were bottling.
Maybe I shouldn't say that. That's actually very true. I was 15 and a half. Yes, so that's true. I was, and I'm sure there are rules and laws against that now. There may have been at the time, and maybe this probably shouldn't get... I'm not sure how you want to word that, but yes, in fact, that's true. I was working underaged on a bottling line.
Great. Hey, I'm sure we all had different interesting jobs. I worked at the post office, you know, delivery, tried to get mail delivered. So now that you are a winemaker, what do you think are some of the sort of romanticized myths about being a winemaker? And what do you think are some of the joys that you get out of your job that you think are best kept secrets?
Well, I think one of the romanticized myths about being a winemaker is that it's just, you know, we're just sitting around all day, we're putting blends together, we taste, we walk the vineyard. That's pretty much all we do. And when in fact, it's really a lot of hard work, and it's project management, it's people. We do get to taste, but, you know, what people need to understand is that we're tasting really, really, really young wines that are high acid, big tannins. Sometimes it hurts when you're drinking, like, white wines, for instance. It's actually not such a pleasant sensation. And, you know, we have to go through, and your mouth, your palate gets completely fatigued. And I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but it's a fantastic job. But, you know, it's really a lot of hard work. And one of the things that I think people need to also understand is that one of the best kept joys about being a winemaker would be, you know, it's cyclical, where it's never the same thing. It's a constant creative environment, and we spend time outside, we come in, we taste the fruits of our labor, we get to share it with other people. It's one of the best experiences ever, really.
Wow. So what were you going to be if you didn't get into this profession?
Well, my first attempt at college, I was an art major. I've always been into art, and decided that I was going to starve as an artist. And I think looking back, that may not be the case, because I've seen lots of different art throughout my travels. But that's what I was going to do, be an artist. So I think I've taken my creative aspect of doing art and applied it to making wine.
So your sort of artistic endeavors have been translated into making beautiful wines for the different wineries that you're involved with, and right now, Peju, of course.
I like to think that, yes.
So I had a chance to read your bio, and I noticed you've actually had quite a long experience working at different wineries and worked under some quite prestigious people. What do you think are some of the mentors that you've had, and what do you think are some of the different styles of winemakers and what you've observed about differences in the styles that winemakers take on with respect to their wines?
That's an interesting question. Well, I've been able to work with some really phenomenal people, and I think some of I can think of three people that come to mind quickly. Jed Steele, who put Kendall Jackson on the map I used to babysit his kids, and he's the winemaker I worked for when I first started at Kendall Jackson. And he's more of an inspirational character, if you will, as opposed to maybe a mentor. I was lucky enough to work with Larry Levine for many, many years, and then had the chance also to work with Michel Roulin he was a consulting winemaker for us. And all three of them, the one thing that maybe kind of stands out, and I didn't really think about it until just now, is that they all have really A personalities, you know, the kind of strong, big presence. And I think just in those three people, now there's all sorts of winemaking styles, but those three people in particular really do make, you know, some really well-rounded, but big, they have big personalities and big wines. So let me just sum it up. That's, you know, it's just, it does kind of pay a little bit of attention to who makes the wine and the type of wine. I don't think that you're going to see, you know, Michel Roulin making, you know, a soft, wimpy wine, because he's, you know, kind of has a big presence. Even though he makes stuff that's finesse, but if you met him, he, you know, has a lot of finesse, and he's very charming, or the way he would say it is charming. So
that's interesting. So you're saying that I think not only does the wine get impacted by where it's at, where the grapes are grown and all that, but just the character of the winemaker also influences the types of wines that get produced as well here. And that bold characters tend to produce bolder wines as well.
You know, and that's true. I hadn't actually thought about that. So I guess my wines will be fun. You can come drink.
Great.
That's what I'll take out of it. Yes.
Well, let's delve a little deeper into what you were just finished, you know, talking about, which is the kind of wines that you make and your personality. So do you think that your personality gets reflected in the wines, and what's your philosophy around winemaking?
Well, for me, I think there's definitely, here in the Valley, or pretty much anywhere, there's two types of winemakers. There's varying degrees of each, but to me, there's the recipe winemakers, or the ones that are more analytical, using just the analysis, needing to follow, you know, A, then B, then C. And then there tends to be the type that's more artistic in approach and more gut feeling. I think I lean definitely more towards the artistic approach, gut feeling, but I use the chemistry and the analysis more as a, you know, a foundation, and it gets me out of trouble. So in case something were to go wrong, I have that in my back pocket. But I'm definitely one that thinks that winemaking is, you know, more like a painting, you know, black canvas, if you will, and all the different picking decisions, oak, yeast, barrels, all have a huge impact on the final outcome. And those are basically kind of your palettes of making a painting, if you will.
How much of that do you think is a personal expression, and where in that whole process do all the other characters at the winery come into play? And when I mean characters, I mean the founders and other people that have been with Peja for a while and who also probably have a palate for the different wines that are being produced for that season.
Well, I think really when you talk about the different characters, the main flavor or the sense of wine coming from different wineries is going to be where the grapes are grown. And so our vineyard, I mean, we're, you know, we own our own vineyards. We, you know, have three different vineyards. We're organic. And the thing that stays consistent is going to be our own vineyards. The winemaking personality, since I'm the one that makes the wine, that comes through, but the thing that stays consistent are the grapes. Now, you can talk about the other characters, and we have, you know, the owners marketing the wines and going out and selling the wines. And that adds to the wines also, because, you know, marketing and the label, people purchase wines based on the pretty label or the story behind it. And so that's how I think the other characters participate or, you know, add to the wine persona, if you will.
In Napa, I've noticed actually Clint and I were just recently up in Napa touring, and it was interesting. We found that there were a couple of different varietals. It seems like certain varietals get introduced. There's a backbone of the Cabernets and the Sauvignon Blancs, and everything, but there were other varietals coming out, and maybe I just noticed it this time around, but I found there were more proprietary blends out there. Is that something I'm just noticing, or do you think there's a trend towards proprietary blends and maritages these days?
I think, you know, here in the U.S., having the single varietal is was kind of new to the wine industry as a whole initially, because people, you know, if you go back and you look at France or you go to Italy, most of those wines were blends, have always mm-hmm. been blends. And so I think maybe, you know, I can't speak to people who made wine, you know, the winemakers that were here in the past, but I think, you know, they wanted to make it different. So we were going to bottle Merlot as a 100% varietal and Cab Sauv to make it more or less unique. But I think as we're getting older as a an industry in California, and we're still relatively young, we haven't been around that long, we're understanding that blends tend to be, in my philosophy, blends are better, more different colors of palettes, right? Or the sum is better, you know, the whole is better than the sum. Because you can have, it's like cooking, you can have all these different pieces and individually they're all really good, but if you throw them all together, sometimes, you know, chicken by itself is fine, but if you throw chicken in with some herbs and, you know, maybe a little lemon and maybe throw some potatoes in there, I mean, all of a sudden you've got a much richer, more balanced meal. And not that chicken's not good all by itself, but you'll just, you can have that opportunity to play and enhance the flavors of the individual varietal. And I, you know, people, it's, winemaking's great in the sense that people have these different ideas. You can come from, you know, wanting to make it recipe or wanting to make it 100% varietal, and then there's the whole other side where you throw the, you know, different varietals and mix and play to try to come up with something that's even better. I think you can have a perfectly good Merlot all by itself, for example, but, you know, unless your vineyard is phenomenal and it's in that tiny, you know, top 5% of the vineyards here in the valley, you know, you can take a Merlot and you can take a little Cab, or you can take Merlot from different parts of the valley or maybe even different parts of your vineyard, and instead of it just being good, can be great just by playing around just a little bit, whether it's different clones or different varietals.
So you did mention sort of the, you know, the old world, the new world, and I know that you've traveled quite a bit around the U.S. Talking about Peju and some of maybe the other wineries that you have worked in, with in the past. What do you think is the overall perception of the Napa region, and do you think it's changed a lot since you've been in the wine industry?
Well, I think that the Napa region within the U.S. is perceived as high quality. People know Napa. They think, you know, great wine. Sometimes people don't even realize that there's, you know, depending on the level of knowledge, maybe people don't realize that there are other areas like Sonoma and Central Coast and what have you that are making some really phenomenal wines. So if you go outside the U.S. and you go, you know, international, I think people definitely that are wine savvy know Napa. Know Napa is making high quality, good wines. And it's funny because if you go in with the winemaking group and you talk to people, which is the group that I would be socializing with and talking to, you know, I think they think that we have great quality. It's interesting that I think the perception is it's a drink now. You know, we don't have a lot of longevity. That's not necessarily true. They give us a hard time about our high alcohols. But in turn, like for France, for example, they can't add acid, but then they'd never have a reason to, because their weather is so completely different that they have naturally high acids, but then we're allowed to. But on the other hand, we're not allowed to add sugar, for instance, but we would never need to because our sugars are naturally so high that in France they aren't, the sugars don't get high enough, so they have to add sugar or they need to at some point. So it's interesting when you talk about the different winemaking styles, the more we learn about winemaking here in Napa versus France or Italy or Germany or in different areas, is that we're so different that you can make phenomenal, great wines, and we kind of tend to start appreciating the wines from the different regions. I know that the people that come internationally come here, and initially we have lots of interns that come, and they're young students, and they have just been in school in whatever area they live, whether it's South America or France or New Zealand, and they come with these attitudes initially that like their wines are the best because that's what we do. And they come here and then they work here for a while and then they really understand that, you know, we're just completely different and there's great wines no matter where we are.
So besides Napa as a wine region, you know, as a personal favorite, what other wine region around the world is one of your personal favorites?
Oh, well, I love the wines from Montalcino. I'm personally really enjoying some of the wines up from Washington right now. I do like the Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand. They kind of grow on me. Yeah, I'm a huge Italian varietal kind of girl. I like wines from Italy, and I like Bordeaux, and I like Burgundy. So, you know, you can give me a Latoche anytime, and I will just melt. So, yeah, I would think Washington for New World has a lot up and coming. They're still mm-hmm. learning, but their stuff is starting to taste better and better. And Burgundy and Bordeaux always, and the wines Montalcino specifically, and the Amarone area, I think, would be my top few.
So we talked quite a bit about sort of your background. Moving on to sort of Peugeot as a winery, you joined in this, I believe, the summer of 2006. What attracted you to Peugeot as a winery, and what do you think makes it unique from the multitude of wineries in Napa?
Well, I think what makes Peugeot unique is that it's been around for 26 plus years. It's family owned. It's been family owned. The family is involved on a daily basis, mom, dad, two daughters here every day, working with the winery, doing more marketing, PR, business related. Although the two daughters, at least one of them anyway, is going to be volunteering in the cellar for the first time this upcoming year. So that's fantastic. So I think that really makes it unique. The fact that we're also organic and sustainable, the family, there's quite a few people that are doing that in the Valley, but it's not everybody, and it's still a relatively small percentage. That makes us unique. So family participation, the fact that we're basically estate-based, we own we have three different vineyards, and we own most of our own fruit, so we're not going out and purchasing it most of the time. We do buy some, like French Colombard from Mendocino County, and from time to time we do buy a little bit of fruit, but the biggest percentage is that we own our own fruit, and that's unusual in the Valley. Not mm-hmm. that nobody does it, but it's unusual. Family-owned, organic, own our own fruit, that really sets us apart.
Yeah, I think you raised some good points there. It's surprising, actually, the number of wineries that I think are family-owned, and then you find out that a while back, written in some little press release, it's been actually bought by a conglomerate, sometimes from, Australia or some other location as well. And from what I heard, actually, while I was doing some wine tasting, even at Cake Bread, it's just getting harder and harder to maintain the estate-grown because of the expensive property in Napa. So it's great that you've been able to do that at Peugeot.
It is great. I feel very fortunate. It's one of the reasons why I enjoy working, just one of the reasons I enjoy working here.
So you did mention a bit about sustainability. What things are you doing at Peugeot to enhance that organic sustainability theme? And when did Peugeot actually start those initiatives?
Okay, we've been sustainable in the vineyards for the last about 6 years at least. But even before that, maybe we weren't, 100%, but we were moving in that direction prior to that. We installed some solar panels on top of our crush pad. So we're getting about somewhere between 35 to 37% of all our energy from our solar panels. We received organic certification in 2007. For our Rutherford Vineyard, we're working on a certification for our other two vineyards. We, on top of, the recycling and all the basic, that sort of thing that we're, that people typically do, if you purchase a hybrid car and you work for Peugeot, then the owner will give you $2,000 towards your hybrid. So we're doing a lot. I mean, we're really, we're constantly looking for more and more ways of, not only just watching our carbon footprint, but making better choices. And then the vineyard, organic, we've talked about biodynamics. Who knows what we'll do? We're working on it, but we're also doing stuff sustainably that maybe people don't understand is, bringing bugs out to the vineyard. So making sure that there's predatory bugs that are the good ones that'll go and eat the bad ones as opposed to spraying. It would take little bean plants out. We'll send them out. I mean, it's just, it's great. More hands-on. And what else do we have going on? We're thinking about putting more solar panels in the vineyard, so upping that percentage from the 37%, and trying to get 50%+.
Yeah, I've actually seen on your website that anyone can actually go and take a look at the production of your solar panels, so that's really neat. So I know this is a challenging question, Sarah, but what would you consider, which of your vineyards would you consider to be your favorite at Peugeot? And of the wines that you're producing this latest season, which ones are your favorites?
So that's a funny question because it's like having you choose your favorite child because, you love them all, but you like them individually, and sometimes you like them for different reasons. And it's like, in the mornings, the kid that, When you want to sleep in, the kid that wants to sleep in too, that's your favorite, the one that's like waking you up and wanting breakfast. Yeah, not so much. So vineyards are kind of like that. I have some that for certain reasons I like some better than others. I think our Persephone vineyard, it's a beautiful vineyard. So walking the vineyard, going out, enjoying that. Maybe that's my favorite, to walk in the vineyard and do samplings for it, because it's so gorgeous. But the Rutherford vineyard, you know, I think the quality of fruit that we get off our Rutherford vineyard is fantastic. Not to say that Persephone isn't fantastic, it's just different. Yeah, I don't have a favorite. I like them all, but individually and for different reasons. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You bring up a great point about Rutherford. I have tasted wines that are sourced, where the grapes are sourced from that area, and it's just has incredible qualities to them. In terms of your favorite wines this season, are there certain ones that just grew up better than others if we're talking about children here?
Okay, well, I can tell you what my favorites are to drink today. So right now, I'm really enjoying our Rutherford Cab Franc Reserve. It's I never used to be a huge Cab Franc drinker, and I love our Cab Franc. I'm definitely a fan of Cab Franc at this point, and I'm really, really enjoying. In fact, I'm having it for dinner tonight. I also enjoy, we have this new, I don't know if you've had this one, but we have a 50-50, which is half Cabernet and half Merlot. It comes 100% from our Persephone vineyard, and that is a great wine. I enjoy our Sauvignon Blanc always. And we make some fun, brought a new wine that we haven't really sold much of, just a little bit out of the tasting room, and making some more, and it's a rosé of Syrah that I'm a huge fan of. And it's in the sexiest, prettiest bottle ever.
Oh, well, I've got to check it out next time I'm in town then.
I think you should.
Because I love wine, but I also, and Clint's more of a purist in terms of wine, but I also love looking at wine bottles. And one of my favorites, actually, I talk about quite a bit, is Eller's 1886. So I've got to check out your Rosé Syrah bottle as well. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, please do.
And so you were mentioning a little while back that the winery business is seasonal. Right around now, what are you busy with these days?
Well, what we're working on right now is still, we've got our 2008s that are still going through malolactic fermentation. So it's our secondary fermentation. So we're doing a lot of analysis and tasting and kind of checking in on the wines that we've just made. I'm also working on putting together all of the 2008 whites. So Sauvignon Blanc is what I've been tasting pretty much on a daily basis, and getting ready to finalize that blend, and I should have that done in the next week or so. The Chardonnay, putting that together, and then also working on our 2006 reserve wines. That's the next up on the list to start bottling. So it's just to go out, taste, and kind of, I put blends together starting from the beginning, but I keep everything separate in barrels. I don't ever put blends together and then put them back to barrel. So all of my blending happens right before bottling. So I am in just blending mode right now.
So what time of the year do you consider yourself to be the busiest, or is it just spurts across the whole entire year?
Oh, it's probably spurts. I'd say harvest is definitely the busiest. That's when we're working the 6-7 days a week, the 12-14 plus hour days. But it's a lot of time and energy, but it's also really exciting. So it's, you know, more fun than it feels like than real work. But that's our busiest. That's definitely, and I'd say that across the board, busiest for, you know, all wineries in the valley here. It's harvest. We're busy. And aside from that, you know, this time period doesn't tend to be too terribly busy, but we are working on blends, you know, getting things ready for bottling. Once bottling starts, all of a sudden it ramps back up, it gets busy again, and then we kind of have a little lull, and then we start bottling for summer, and then we start all over and get ready for harvest again, and, you know, and the cycle continues.
I am curious, Sarah, since you're doing a lot of blendings right now, are there any tips as to what you've been tasting in the barrels that you think are going to be the shining stars of the next release?
The shining stars of the next release. Well, all the 2006 reserves are tasting delicious. So, and I am, and the Sauvignon Blanc is always good. And we've been getting great reviews for our Chardonnay, and that's been tasting really nice as well. So I'd say that the reserves are great. You know, 2006 was a good year. They're tasting, you know, it's good balance, good tannins, but not over the top. Great mouthfeel. And the Sauvignon Blanc, you know what? They're all good. You're making me choose again. You're making me choose what my favorite
I keep trying, Sarah. So as much as
that's
it sounds like
as
much as it sounds like you're having a fantastic time at your day job, when you're not a winemaker at Peju, what are the things that you enjoy doing for the rest of your sort of recreational time?
Rest of my recreation. Let's see. Well, my friends would say I'm drinking bubbles. I'm part of hang out with my other winemaker friends. They tend to be winemakers. I have a bubble club that I meet with on a regular basis. We're having dinner tonight. So I drink a lot of champagne bubbles. Mm. I also like to hike. I really get to know the Napa Valley, but then go over to Marin and hike Mount Tam. So I enjoy being outdoors. I love cooking. I wouldn't want to do it for a career, but I absolutely love having people over for dinner. And I love traveling as well. So drinking bubbles, hiking, cooking, traveling, and I like to read. So that probably sums up what I'm typically doing, but I'm social, so I'm out, out doing a lot.
Sarah, I want to really thank you for the time you've taken to spend with me as well as our listeners. Sounds like you've got a pretty nice life. So if ever you want to trade spots, let me know. but thank you so much for the time that you've taken today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed myself. And thank you to the listeners for listening. And go drink some wine.
I'm Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek. Thank you for joining us.